as Scott reconstructed the text of NSAM 273 from partial quotations and references, it represented a departure from past policy in at least five respects. One, an assertion for the first time that the, quote, central objective, unquote, of the United States was to assist South Vietnam, quote, to win, rather than simply to, quote, help South Vietnam. Two, a quiet cancellation of the November 20th plans to withdraw troops, disguised by a public reaffirmation of a previously announced, quote, objective with respect to withdrawal. Three, authorization of planning for a coherent program of covert activities in 1964, and for exploring the feasibility of initiating a wider war against North Vietnam. Four, an order to, quote, all senior officers of the government, unquote, to avoid any criticism of U.S.-Vietnam policy. Five, a directive to the State Department to develop a, quote, case, which would demonstrate Hanoi's control of the Viet Cong. Scott's analysis recognizes that some of these bureaucratic shifts of language were subtle, and that the result was to initiate, rather than fulfill, a reversal of policy. He argues, however, that the consequences of the November 24th NSAM, while more symbolic than practical, were well understood, and that they ended a major debate over escalation versus phased disengagement, which had for some weeks caused divisions in both Washington and Saigon.
Okay, now we're going to be going to a couple of segments of tape here in just a second. Let me restate what you're going to be hearing in the first of these two here again. You'll hear these memoranda a lot. Don't worry about it, because it's going to, I think you'll find it useful. The discussion is pretty weighty here. Now, basically, in the first of these two segments, which comes from a Hard Rain show, it's a program that I do here on KFJC and I've been doing for some time. It was from a Hard Rain show of June 10th, 1981. Now, what you're going to be hearing about here is essentially two main items here. First of all, you're going to be hearing how NSAM 273 reversed the long-standing trend in the Kennedy administration to avoiding an unlimited, open-ended military commitment to South Vietnam. Basically, NSAM 111, which was Kennedy's sort of official document on the subject, clearly set his Vietnam policy in a limited and ultimately diplomatic direction. Kennedy was pointedly avoiding an open-ended, unlimited military commitment to Vietnam. This was symbolized by only helping the South Vietnamese, not committing us to helping the South Vietnamese win the war, or a commitment to the overriding objective. These words became to symbolize, although they sound like very unimportant distinctions, they came to symbolize a central debate as to whether we were there to help the South Vietnamese or whether we were there to basically blow North Vietnam out of the water.
One of the key things to keep in mind is that many people have attributed the statement to Lyndon Johnson, that he did not want to be the first president, he did not want to be the president who'd go down in history as losing Vietnam. So this is where the word win becomes very key point. It is not merely to help the Vietnamese, who were barely capable of keeping their own country under any kind of control and really had very little popular support, but he was basically committed to winning in Vietnam, and he was not going to be the president who was going to lose Vietnam. So we've changed from a focus of helping an ally to winning a war.
Exactly. And the second thing we're going to be talking about, you're going to hear rather in this tape segment here, concerns the way in which NSAM 273 reversed NSAM 263. Now, there are three dates to remember in connection with NSAM 263. It was decided upon at a meeting on October 5th, 1963, which in turn was acting upon some troop withdrawal recommendations which were projected by then commanding officer in Vietnam, Maxwell Taylor, and Secretary of Defense McNamara. Kennedy asked for an estimate on when troops could be withdrawn. That estimate came on October 2nd. The decision to withdraw 1,000 to 1,500 troops was arrived at on the 5th, formalized in a memorandum on the 11th. Now, this is important because the language of some of the national security memoranda, as well as the Pentagon papers, refer to maintaining the status quo ante October 2nd. That, as we're going to see, is a deliberate attempt to mislead. It's to make it appear as if there was a continuity of policy from Kennedy to Johnson. But the status quo ante October 2nd was in fundamental contradiction with Kennedy's policy because he reversed it as of the 5th. This formalized on the 11th. And pay attention to the tricky language, because the Pentagon papers themselves, as well as the memoranda from which they were concocted, apparently go out of their way to mislead with regard to policy from Kennedy to Johnson. So those are the things you're going to be hearing about in this tape segment from June 10th, 1981. Beginning this evening with the first of our two main topics of discussion, the manner in which NSAM 273 committed us to helping the South Vietnamese win the war. The significance of this semantic distinction, basically, as I said, we were previously committed to helping the South Vietnamese. The significance of this commitment to helping the South Vietnamese win is described by Peter Dale Scott as follows. He writes, in the Kennedy assassination of the Vietnam War, while noting that the stated objectives, unquote, of the new covert operations plan against North Vietnam were unlikely to be fulfilled by the O plan itself, Mr. Gelb, like the rest of the Pentagon study authors, fails to inform us what these stated objectives were. The answer lies in the central objective defined by the first paragraph of NSAM 273. It remains the central objective of the United States and South Vietnam to assist the people and government of that country to win their contest against the externally directed and supported communist conspiracy. The test of all U.S. decisions and actions in this area should be the effectiveness of their contribution to this purpose. Oh, by the way, Leslie Gelb, mentioned by Peter Dale Scott, was one of the authors of the Pentagon Papers and is now National Security Editor for the New York Times. Now, Scott goes on here to point out that the commitment to helping the South Vietnamese win ended a long-standing and apparently fairly lively debate within the Kennedy administration concerning the nature of our commitment in Southeast Asia. Some favored a limited and political commitment in Vietnam, that is, to assist, and some favored an unlimited and military commitment that would have committed us to helping the South Vietnamese win. Scott describes this. To understand this bureaucratic prose, we must place it in context. Ever since Kennedy came to power, but increasingly since the Diem crisis and assassination, there had arisen serious bureaucratic disagreement as to whether the U.S. commitment in Vietnam was limited and political, to assist, or open-ended and military, to win. By its use of the word win, unquote, NSAM 273, among other things, ended a brief period of indecision and division when indecision itself was favoring the proponents of a limited and political strategy over those whose preference was an unlimited and military one. Scott goes on to point out the significance of the word commitment to the objective. He points out that President Kennedy had pointedly avoided the use of the word commitment, which was used in NSAM 273 2 days after he was killed. Scott writes, in this conflict, the seemingly innocuous word objective, unquote, had come in the Aesopian double talk of bureaucratic politics to be the test of a commitment. As early as May of 1961, when President Kennedy was backing off from a major commitment in Laos, he had willingly agreed with the Pentagon that the U.S. objective and concept of operations, unquote, was to prevent communist domination of South Vietnam. In November of 1961, however, Taylor, McNamara, and Rusk attempted to strengthen this language by recommending that we now take the decision to commit ourselves to the objective of preventing the fall of South Vietnam to communism, unquote. Note the use of the word commitment. McNamara had earlier concluded that this commitment to the clear objective, unquote, was the basic issue, adding that it should be accompanied by a warning of punitive retaliation against North Vietnam. Without this commitment, he added, we do not believe major U.S. forces should be introduced in South Vietnam, unquote. And Scott goes on to point out that Kennedy specifically rejected the use of the word commitment throughout the course of his administration and in all of his statements on his Vietnam policy. Despite this advice, Kennedy, after much thought, accepted all the recommendations for introducing U.S. units except for the commitment to the objective, unquote, which was the first recommendation of all. NSAM 111 of November 22, 1961, which became the basic document for Kennedy Vietnam policy, was issued without this first recommendation. Instead, he sent a letter to Diem on December 14th of 1961 in which the U.S. officially described the limited and somewhat ambiguous extent of its commitment. Quote, "Our primary purpose is to help your people. We shall seek to persuade the communists to give up their attempts of force and subversion," unquote. One compensatory phrase of this letter, "the campaign supported and directed from the outside," unquote, became, as we shall see, a rallying point for the disappointed hawks in the Pentagon and was elevated to a new prominence in NSAM 273 paragraph 1's definition of a communist conspiracy. It would appear that Kennedy, in his basic policy documents after 1961, avoided any use of the word objective that might be equated to a commitment, unquote. The issue was not academic. As presented by Taylor in November of 1961, this commitment would have been open-ended, quote, "to deal with any escalation the communists might choose to impose," unquote. In October of 1963, Taylor and McNamara tried once again. By proposing to link the withdrawal announcement about 1,000 men to a clearly defined and public policy objective, unquote, of defeating communism. Once again, Kennedy, by subtle changes of language, declined to go along. His refusal is the more interesting when we see that the word and the sense he rejected in October of 1963, which would have made the military objective, unquote, the overriding one, are explicitly sanctioned by Johnson's first policy document, NSAM 273 of 11-24-63. The second major point that I'd like to discuss this evening concerning NSAM 273 concerns the manner in which that document, and bear in mind this was 2 days after Kennedy was killed, canceled President Kennedy's announced plans to withdraw between 1,000 and 1,300 troops from Vietnam by the year's end. Now this troop withdrawal was envisioned by President Kennedy, who had sided with those who favored a limited and political commitment in Vietnam rather than unlimited and military, the significance of which we've discussed. Well, Kennedy had basically elected to begin a phased withdrawal of our troops in Vietnam as a means of pressuring President Diem to go to the conference table and to enact some social reforms which would have enhanced his popularity and the viability of his government. The significance of the troop withdrawal in committing the United States to a political solution to the Vietnam conflict is discussed by Peter Dale Scott in his essay here. Scott writes, "By mid-1963, with the aggravating political crisis in Vietnam, the pressure to move ahead with withdrawal plans was increasing. This increased pressure was motivated not by military euphoria," unquote, if indeed it ever had been, "but by political dissatisfaction. A State Department telegram from Rusk to Lodge on August 29th of 1963 expresses the opinion that U.S. political pressures on Diem would be otherwise futile, quote, unless such talk included a real sanction, such as a threatened withdrawal of our support, it is unlikely that it would be taken seriously by a man who may feel that we are inescapably committed to an anti-communist Vietnam." And recall the significance of the word commitment we covered a little while ago. Continuing here with Scott's narrative, Pentagon Paper 4B4 ignores this telegram as well, yet even it, in marked contrast to Leslie Gelb's summary and analysis of it, admits that part of the motivation behind the stress placed on U.S. force withdrawal, and particularly the seemingly arbitrary desire to effect the 1,000-man withdrawal by the end of 1963, apparently was as a signal to influence both the North Vietnamese and the South Vietnamese and set the stage for possible later steps that would help bring the insurgency to an end, unquote. Basically, Scott goes on to point out that Kennedy had elected to go ahead with a troop withdrawal as the main element, in a policy to pursue a political solution to the war. Now, on October 5th, Kennedy decided on this policy, that the troop withdrawal policy was formalized with National Security Action Memorandum 263 on October 11th, and it was canceled by NSAM 273 of 11-24. Now, on November 20th, of 1963, at a meeting of the Joint Chiefs of Staff and the National Security Council in Honolulu, President Kennedy announced his October 5th decision that was formalized in NSAM 263 of 10-11-63. He announced this troop withdrawal And apparently at that same meeting, an accelerated plan of troop withdrawal was also agreed to. That Kennedy had unequivocally elected to pursue the policy of phased withdrawal as a means to a political solution to the war. So his decision to do so was described by Scott as follows. As the president's questioner of October 31st was apparently aware, the issue was no longer whether 1,000 men would be withdrawn with a military assistance program reduction in fiscal 65 of $27 million, but whether the withdrawal program might not be accelerated by 6 months with a corresponding MAP aid reduction of $33 million in fiscal 1965. Planning for this second accelerated plan, unquote, had been stepped up after the October 5th decision which authorized the first. The issue was an urgent one, since the fiscal 1965 budget would have to be presented to Congress in January. The chronology of Pentagon Paper 4B4 on phased withdrawal of U.S. forces tells us that on November 20th, 2 days before the assassination, the Honolulu Conference secretly, quote, agreed that the accelerated plan, speed up of force withdrawal by 6 months directed by McNamara in October, should be maintained, unquote. In addition, the Honolulu Conference issued a press release which, according to the New York Times of November 21st, 1963, quote, reaffirmed the United States' plan to bring home about 1,000 of its 16,500 troops from South Vietnam by January 1st. Thus, the language of NSAM 273 of November 24th, by going back to the status quo ante-October 5th, was itself misleading, as is the careful selection from it in the Pentagon study. Recall that October 5th was basically the day on which Kennedy decided that troop withdrawal was the way to go, and that the proposition by Taylor and McNamara of October 2nd with regard to the objective of our withdrawal was basically simply more to do with the idea of a commitment. Basically, as Scott points out, by referring to the status quo ante October 5th, it nullified the NSAM 263 of October 11th. This is an important point. Picking up once again with Scott's narrative. Thus, the language of NSAM 273 of November 24th, by going back to the status quo ante-October 5th, was itself misleading, as is the careful selection from it in the Pentagon study. By reverting to the informal objective of October 2nd, NSAM 273 paragraph 2 tacitly effaced both the formalized plans of NSAM 263 of October 5th and 11th announced on November 20th, and also the accelerated plan discussed and apparently agreed to on the 20th. NSAM 273 paragraph 6, according to most citations of it, would have explicitly maintained both military and economic programs at levels as high as those of the Diem regime. Now, the segment that you're going to be listening to next comes from a Hard Rain show from June 17th, 1981. Two basic points are going to be dealt with here. First of all, NSAM 249, the second of the four memoranda that I talked about at the top of this broadcast, that was from June 25th, 63, and it suspended all covert action against North Vietnam. It was the last official Kennedy document on the subject, and it's worth noting here for a couple of reasons. First of all, NSAM 273 of 11/24 negated, in essence, NSAM 249. It scheduled covert action against North Vietnam under something known as SINCPAC O Plan 34-63. This is important because the America's involvement in Vietnam in terms of main ground units, American combat troops, began from something called the Gulf of Tonkin incident, in which American destroyers, which were supposedly in international waters, were allegedly attacked by North Vietnamese patrol boats. It later developed, when the Pentagon Papers were released, that they not only were the ships in North Vietnamese territorial waters, there was no firm evidence that they were ever attacked, and more importantly, it revealed that U.S. 7th Fleet units had been covering for South Vietnamese commando raids against North Vietnam for some time. This according to the provisions of Plan 3463.
And that specifically a South Vietnamese commando raid had taken place on in the area immediately adjoining where the Gulf of Tonkin incident took place, within 48 hours of the Gulf of Tonkin incident. So it was a direct, if you don't want to use the word provocation, a direct action had been taken in that area by the South Vietnamese under U.S. fleet cover within 48 hours of the events that we know as the Gulf of Tonkin.
Now, in response to the Gulf of Tonkin incident, Congress passed something called the Gulf of Tonkin Resolution, and what this enabled President Johnson to do was to take any steps that he felt would be necessary in order to protect U.S. forces in the region. under that, I guess you could call it a loophole, Johnson basically committed over half a million U.S. troops to Vietnam using the Gulf of Tonkin resolution, which came from the Gulf of Tonkin incident, which came from Plan 3463, which came from NSAM 273. Now, it's worth noting here that, as Peter Dale Scott notes, in June of 1963, when NSAM 249 was generated by Kennedy suspending covert action against Vietnam, apparently North Vietnamese and right-wing U.S. sources agree that covert action against North Vietnam, which had been suspended, was resumed in that month. So what we really see here is the intelligence establishment of the United States, or the national security apparatus, once again declaring its functional independence from presidential and constitutional authority. And this is something we've seen in the past with regard to the Kennedy assassination.
That's right. We discussed it at some length in the first broadcast in terms of the Bay of Pigs, the U-2, and a variety of other things. So, again, that is something else to bear in mind here, as Dave put it, and it is a key point, is the independence of the intelligence function.
Okay, one more small point here that's going to be dealt with in this tape segment you're about to listen to is the fact that the language, not only of the Pentagon memoranda themselves, the National Security Action Memoranda, but also of the Pentagon papers, the Pentagon history compiled from these memoranda, go out of their way to mislead in the language they use to make it appear as though there was a continuity of policy from Kennedy to Johnson, whereas in fact, as we're seeing, there wasn't. But this is important because, once again, another level of cover-up here, apparently.
All right. Now, this is, once again, a tape segment from Dave Emery's Hard Rain. This program was originally aired on June 17th, 1981.
Well, as I said a couple of minutes ago, we're going to begin tonight by looking at a very important respect in which NSAM 273 reversed President Kennedy's Vietnam policy. That is, NSAM 273 for the first time authorized covert actions against North Vietnam. This, of course, was a major contributing factor to the Gulf of Tonkin incident, which resulted in the Gulf of Tonkin resolution used by President Johnson to involve us in Vietnam and to justify every phase of our escalation in that war. Continuing just a minute here, I'm going to wet my whistle. Okay, proceeding now. Scott begins his discussion of the authorization for covert action that is contained in NSAM 273 by discussing the pressures that had been put on President Kennedy to escalate the nature of our covert operations. He was under a great deal of pressure to intervene frankly rather than surreptitiously and to move from a limited to an unlimited commitment in the area. Scott writes, "The inclusion in planning of MACV was in keeping with the Kennedy doctrine enacted after the Bay of Pigs fiasco that responsibility for any large paramilitary operation, wholly or partly covert, is properly the primary responsibility of the Department of Defense," unquote. Before November 26, 1963, U.S. covert operations in Asia had always, at least in theory, been secret and plausibly deniable, unquote. These were the two criteria set for itself in 1948 by the National Security Council when it first authorized CIA covert operations under its Other Functions and Duties Clause in the 1947 National Security Act. Throughout 1963, the Kennedy administration was under considerable pressure, public as well as within its personnel, to go beyond these guidelines and intervene frankly, unquote, rather than surreptitiously, unquote. In May of 63, this appeal for escalation was publicly joined by William Henderson, an official of Sekone Mobile, which had a major economic interest in Southeast Asia, to an appeal to move from a limited, unquote, to an unlimited commitment in this area. The covert operations planning authorized by NSAM 273 seems to have been the threshold for at least the first of these policy changes, if not both. In contrast, both were wholly incompatible with the Kennedy administration's last movements toward withdrawal. In May of 1963, McNamara had authorized changes in long-range planning, quote, to accomplish a more rapid withdrawal, unquote. And on November 20th in Honolulu, as we have seen, the resulting initial withdrawal of 1,000 men was supplemented by the so-called accelerated plan. It is hard to imagine at either date the same man or men contemplating a new 34A elaborate program of acts which threatened war to coincide with an accelerated withdrawal of U.S. forces. Next, Scott goes on here to describe SINGPAC O-Plan 34-63. That, by the way, was the formal name for the covert operations program against North Vietnam. Scott writes here, "The next sentence of Study 4C-2A tells us that SINGPAC O-Plan 34-63 was approved by the Joint Chiefs of Staff on the 9th of September, unquote. This approval, unquote, means only that at the very height of the paralytic standoff between the political and military factions, the Joint Chiefs forwarded one more tendentious military alternative for consideration by McNamara and above all by the 303 committee, about whom the author is silent. One Gravel Pentagon Papers chronology, 3141, suggests that Kennedy and his White House staff never were consulted by McNamara about O-Plan 34-63. Next, Scott goes on to describe here how the last policy document of Kennedy's administration with respect to covert operations against North Vietnam delayed any covert action against North Vietnam. That document is National Security Action Memorandum 249 of June 25th of 1963. And Scott also points out that in the very month that document was formulated and approved, June of 1963, apparently the CIA had undertaken covert operations against North Vietnam on its own without Kennedy's approval or knowledge. Scott also indicates that the CIA not only undertook operations against North Vietnam, but operations in Laos and Cambodia as well, which led to escalations of the fighting in both of those areas. Scott points out further that apparently the Chinese nationalists or Kuomintang were involved with the CIA and with their illicit escalation of covert operations in North Vietnam, Laos, and Cambodia. Scott goes on to comment here as follows. The same Gravel chronology reports that CIA cross-border operations, radically curtailed after the 1962 Geneva agreements on Laos, were resumed by November 19th, 1963, one day before the Honolulu conference, even though the first presidential authorization cited for such renewed operations is Johnson's NSAM 273 of November 26th. Kennedy's NSAM 249 of June 25th, 1963, in rejecting states' proposals for actions against North Vietnam, had authorized planning for operations against Laos conditional on further consultation, and it had urged review of whether, quote, additional U.S. actions should be taken in Laos before any action be directed against North Vietnam, unquote. Although the overall language of NSAM 249, which refers to an unpublished memorandum, is obscure, this wording seems to indicate that in June of 1963, Kennedy had delayed authorization of any action against North Vietnam. Yet North Vietnamese and right-wing U.S. sources agree that in this very month of June of 1963, covert operations against North Vietnam were resumed by South Vietnamese commandos. These actions had the approval of General Harkins in Saigon, but not, according to the U.S. sources, of President Kennedy. The same sources, further corroborated by the Pentagon Papers, both linked these raids to increased military cooperation between South Vietnam and the Chinese nationalists, whose own commandos began turning up in North Vietnam in increasing numbers. It has also been suggested that Kuomintang influences and their sympathizers in Thailand and the CIA were behind the right-wing political assassinations and military offensive, which in 1963 led to a resumption of fighting in Laos with new American supplies and full U.S. political support, unquote. This autumn of 1963 military offensive in Laos coincided with escalation of activities against Prince Sihanouk in Cambodia by the CIA-supported Khmer Sarai in South Vietnam. After two infiltrating Khmer Sarai agents had been captured and had publicly confessed, Cambodia on November 19, 1963, severed all military and economic ties with the United States and 1 month later broke off diplomatic relations. All of these disturbing events suggest that in late 1963, covert operations were beginning to escape the political limitations both internal and international established during the course of the Kennedy administration. During the months of September and October, many established newspapers, including the New York Times, began to complain about the CIA's arrogation of power, and this concern was echoed in Congress by Senator Mansfield. The evidence now published in the Pentagon Papers, including Kennedy's NSAM 249 of June and the Gravel chronology's testimony to the resumption of cross-border operations, also suggests that covert operations may have been escalated in defiance of the president's secret directives. If this chronology is correct, then Pentagon Study 4C2A's efforts to show continuity between the Kennedy and Johnson regimes suggests instead that President Kennedy had lost control of covert planning and operations. The last major point I'd like to go on to make in tonight's broadcast is the fact that not only did NSAM 273 reverse, in many significant respects, Kennedy's Vietnam policy, but the Pentagon Papers, the studies commissioned by then-Secretary of Defense Robert McNamara, as well as the original Pentagon memoranda from which they were compiled, go out of their way to deceive a would-be reader with respect to continuity of Vietnam policy from Kennedy to Johnson. There was not, as we have seen, such a continuity. However, the Pentagon Papers and the documents upon which they were based go out of their way to make it appear as if there was such a continuity. Peter Dale Scott describes this in the Kennedy assassination of the Vietnam War as follows. With respect to events in November of 1963, the bias and deception of the original Pentagon documents are considerably reinforced in the Pentagon studies commissioned by Robert McNamara. Nowhere is this deception more apparent than in the careful editing and censorship of the report of a Honolulu conference on November 20th of 1963 and of National Security Action Memorandum 273, which was approved 4 days later. Study after study is carefully edited so as to create a false illusion of continuity between the last 2 days of President Kennedy's presidency and the first 2 days of President Johnson's. The narrow division of the studies into topics as well as periods allows some studies to focus on the optimism, unquote, which led to plans for withdrawal on November 20th and 24th of 63, and others on the deterioration and gravity, unquote, which at the same meetings led to plans for carrying the war north. These incompatible pictures of continuous optimism or deterioration are supported generally by selective censorship and occasionally by downright misrepresentation. Scott goes on to cite a flagrant case of misrepresentation, quoting directly here from the Pentagon Papers. Scott relates, National Security Action Memorandum 273 approved 26th November 1963. The immediate cause for NSAM 273 was the assassination of President Kennedy 4 days earlier. Newly installed President Johnson needed to reaffirm or modify the policy lines pursued by his predecessor. President Johnson quickly chose to reaffirm the Kennedy policies. Emphasis should be placed, the document stated, on the Mekong Delta area, but not only in political terms. Not only in military terms, excuse me. Political, economic, social, educational, and informational activities must also be pushed. We should seek to turn the tide not only of battle, but of belief, unquote. Military operations should be initiated under close political control up to within 50 kilometers inside of Laos. U.S. assistance programs should be maintained at levels at least equal to those under the Diem government so that the new government of Vietnam would not be tempted to regard the U.S. as seeking to disengage. I'd like to interrupt Scott's narrative here to point out that, as we've seen, Kennedy had opted for a phased withdrawal of U.S. forces in Vietnam as a means of forcing the government of North Vietnam to the conference table in order to settle the war politically rather than militarily. So that last sentence there was a deliberate attempt at deception. Continuing here with Scott's quotation from the Pentagon Papers vis-a-vis NSAM 273. The same document also revalidated the planned phased withdrawal of U.S. forces announced publicly in broad terms by President Kennedy shortly before his death. The objective of the United States with respect to withdrawal of U.S. military personnel remains as stated in the White House statement of October 2nd, 1963. I'd like to interrupt once again to point out that it was on October 5th of 1963 that Kennedy decided on the phased withdrawal of troops. That was formalized on October 11th of 63 and publicly announced on November 20th, at which time the accelerated withdrawal plan was agreed to. But so that the statement here of the objective of the United States withdrawal, that, by the way, refers to the concept of military victory that Kennedy had rejected, but the objective of the withdrawal remains as stated in the White House statement of October 2nd of 63. Of course, October 2nd was before Kennedy had decided on phased withdrawal, so this is an example of verbal chicanery here, an attempt to, once again, mislead with respect to continuity of Vietnam policy from Kennedy to Johnson. Continuing once again with Scott's quotation from the Pentagon Papers, no new programs were proposed or endorsed. No increases in the level or nature of U.S. assistance suggested or foreseen. The emphasis was on persuading the new government in Saigon to do well those things which the fallen government was considered to have done poorly. NSAM 273 had, as described above, limited cross-border operations to an area 50 kilometers within Laos. Scott goes on to comment here. The reader is invited to check the veracity of this account of NSAM 273 against the text, as reconstructed from various sources in our Appendix A. If the author of this study is not a deliberate and foolish liar, then some superior had denied him access to the second and more important page of NSAM 273, which authorized planning for specific covert operations graduated in intensity against the DRV, unquote, i.e. North Vietnam. As we have seen, this covert operations planning soon set the stage for a new kind of war, not only through the celebrated 34A operations, which contributed to the Tonkin Gulf incidents, but also through the military's accompanying observations as early as December of 63 that only air attacks against North Vietnam would achieve these operations' stated objectives, unquote. And next, Scott goes on to refer to a man named Leslie Gelb, who is the author of the Pentagon studies, which have become known as the Pentagon Papers. Leslie Gelb is also the national security editor of the New York Times. Continuing here, Scott writes, Leslie Gelb, the director of the Pentagon Study Task Force and the author of the various and mutually contradictory study summaries, notes that with this planning, quote, a firebreak had been crossed, and the U.S. had embarked on a program that was recognized as holding little promise of achieving its stated objectives, at least in its early stages. We have argued that these crucial and controversial stated objectives proposed in SINCPAC's O-Plan 3463 of September 9th of 1963 were rejected by Kennedy in October of 1963 and first authorized by the first paragraph of National Security Action Memorandum 273. And Scott goes on here to describe the manner in which the Pentagon Papers deceive with regard to the Kennedy announcement of troop withdrawal on November 20th. We read part of this passage last week, but I think it's worth repeating. The Pentagon studies, supposedly disinterested reports to the Secretary of Defense, systematically mislead with respect to NSAM 273, which McNamara himself had helped to draft. Their lack of bona fides is illustrated by the general phenomenon that, as can be seen from our Appendix A, banal or misleading paragraphs like 2, 3, and 5 are quoted verbatim, sometimes over and over, whereas those preparing for an expanded war are either omitted or else referred to obliquely. The only study to quote a part of the paragraph dealing with North Vietnam does so from subordinate instructions. It fails to note that this language was authorized in NSAM 273. And study after study suggests, as did press reports at the time, that the effect of NSAM 273 paragraph 2 was to perpetuate what Mr. Gelb ill-advisedly calls the public White House promise in October, unquote, to withdraw 1,000 U.S. troops. In fact, the public White House statement on October 2nd was no promise, but a personal estimate attributed to McNamara and Taylor. As we have seen, Kennedy's decision on October 5th to implement this withdrawal, a plan authorized by NSAM 263 of October 11th, was not made public until the Honolulu Conference of November 20th, when an accelerated withdrawal program about which Mr. Gelb is silent was also approved. NSAM 273 was in fact approved on Sunday, November 24th, and its misleading opening paragraphs, including the meaningless reaffirmation of the objectives of the October 2nd withdrawal statement, were leaked to selected correspondents. Mr. Gelb, who should know better, pretends that NSAM 273 was intended primarily to endorse the policies pursued by President Kennedy and to ratify provisional decisions reached on November 20th in Honolulu, unquote. In fact, the secret effect of NSAM 273's sixth paragraph, which unlike the second was not leaked to the press, was to annul the NSAM 263 withdrawal decision announced 4 days earlier at Honolulu and also the accelerated withdrawal program. Both military and economic programs, it was emphasized, should be maintained at levels as high as those in the time of the Diem regime, unquote. The source of this change is not hard to pinpoint. Of the 8 people known to have participated in the November 24th reversal of the November 20th withdrawal decisions, 5 took part in both meetings. Of the 3 new officials present, the chief was Lyndon Johnson in his second full day and first business meeting as President of the United States. The importance of this second meeting, like that of the document it approved, is indicated by its deviousness. One can only conclude that NSAM 273 paragraph 2's public reaffirmation of an October 2nd withdrawal objective, unquote, coupled with 273 paragraph 6's secret annulment of an October 5th withdrawal plan, was deliberately deceitful. The result of the misrepresentations in the Pentagon studies and Mr. Gelb's summaries is, in other words, to perpetuate a deception dating back to NSAM 273 itself.
basically, just boiling the whole thing down, although I think that Mr. Scott and Dave, in his reading, went over it pretty carefully, just to boil things down for you nicely, basically what we're looking at is a planned effort, and quite an effort it took also, and if you want to call it conspiracy, you can, but I think the facts show that whatever you call it, it was definite and deliberate, an attempt on the part of the Joint Chiefs of Staff and President Johnson and others to literally reverse the course of the Kennedy administration under the guise of continuing the Kennedy administration's response to Vietnam. Going to read one last thing here. This is from the same essay, from Peter Dale Scott's essay from the Assassinations Dallas and Beyond, the Kennedy Assassination and the Vietnam War is the name of the essay. And in this particular anthology, this is Mr. Scott's summing up paragraph, and it goes as follows. National Security Action Memorandum 273, it seems clear, was an important document in the history of the 1964 escalations, as well as in the reversal of President Kennedy's late and ill-fated program of Vietnamization by 1965. The systematic censorship and distortion of NSAM 273 in 1963 and again in 1971 by the Pentagon study and later by the New York Times raises serious questions about the bona fides of the Pentagon study. It also suggests that the Kennedy assassination was itself an important, perhaps a crucial, event in the history of the Indochina War. I'm going to be getting on into the essentially the second part of this show. And this, in fact, ties in, though, to some things mentioned in the first part of the show. One of the key points at which...
Radio Free. America.
Well, good evening once again. Welcome back to a special expanded One Step Beyond, which actually is sort of metamorphosing into a Radio Free America, an archive show. For the next 2 weeks after this, as well as for the rest of the evening, we will be going over material concerning the assassination of President Kennedy, the 25th anniversary of which is this coming Tuesday. Again, this evening we're addressing the effect of the Kennedy assassination on American history. It is difficult to imagine how much different our history would be, how much different contemporary society would be, had we not been involved in Vietnam from, say, 1963 and thereafter. In other words, if our involvement had only been the early limited involvement rather than the later unlimited involvement, how much different might this country be? We wouldn't have those Vietnam War memorials with all of the names of the dead people on them. Southeast Asia certainly would be a very different place today. We wouldn't have the Vietnam veterans with Agent Orange and delayed stress syndrome, all of the problems that bottleneck at the VA and that have caused so much strife and so much pain to so many people. It is difficult to imagine how much different this country would be. Before leaving the subject of Vietnam and moving on to Watergate, I'd like to read I'm actually going to read a National Security Action Memorandum 263 on the air. This was sent to us by a listener who had apparently obtained this from a computer database. This is the actual National Security Action Memorandum withdrawing the United States from Vietnam, agreed to on October 5th of 1963, officially dated October 11th of 1963, and publicly revealed by President Kennedy November 20th, 1963, 2 days before he was killed, and 4 days before the action he was taking in NSA 263 was reversed by NSA 273, as we've seen. The memo reads, National Security Action Memorandum Number 263, 2, Secretary of State, Secretary of Defense, Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. Subject, South Vietnam. At a meeting on October 5th, 1963, the President considered recommendations contained in the report of Secretary McNamara and General Taylor on their mission to South Vietnam. The President approved the military recommendations contained in Section 1B, pages 1 through 3 of the report, but directed that no formal announcement be made of the implementation of plans to withdraw 1,000 U.S. military personnel by the end of 1963. After discussion of the remaining recommendations of the plan, the President approved an instruction to Ambassador Lodge, as is set forth in State Department Telegram No. 534, to Saigon. So again, the initial withdrawal of 1,000 U.S. troops to have been accomplished by the end of 1963 as part of a 2-year phased withdrawal to have all of the U.S. troops home by the end of 65. That is what is contained here in NSA 263. The rest of the document reads, McGeorge Bundy, and his signature attached above that, copy furnished Director of Central Intelligence, Administration.